Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. If I sound a little weird today, it's definitely your ears are ringing true. I don't have my good microphone because all of my belongings are currently packed inside of a U-Haul truck. My husband and I are leaving tomorrow to travel from Denver, Colorado, all the way to Portland, Maine, where we will be relocating. So I am sitting here on my makeshift bed with my laptop and talking to you from here. I am really excited to get the second part of this episode out to you guys. I got some really great feedback about the first panel episode, and I think the second one is full of just as much wonderful information. So I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll talk to you on the other side. Hey. I absolutely loved, especially when we recorded this, hearing everybody's different experience, and it really brings home that point that you made earlier, Brittany, that just hearing other people's journeys and experiences is so validating. And I really felt that listening to everybody's experience to cross train.
Yes. And knowing that there's different unique reasons why we choose that path, and all of them are important and really just unique to ourselves and our own journey.
Yes, yes, I love that. All unique paths. So something that came up after when Brittany and I originally sat down to kind of figure out how to do this episode, we had a list of questions and we were kind of like, okay, cool. We can kind of answer some questions and let the discussion go wherever it's going to go. Sidebar, I think we might as well tell this mini story here. This was originally going to be like a 2-hour long episode.
Yep.
That was so great. This conversation was so lovely with everybody. I think it went longer than 2 hours. It was awesome. And we recorded it on Zoom, and I was going to break it up into a couple different episodes, but so we could really kind of really get the nitty gritty of what we dug into. But Zoom had a mind of its own.
As many technologies do.
Yes, right? Not surprising. I shouldn't be surprised by that. But Zoom ended up, I guess it deleted all of the space when people weren't talking. So, you know, there's eight of us on this panel. And whenever someone wasn't talking, it just like deleted that space. So when I pulled up all of the recordings, they're like all different sizes and everybody's talking at once when I hit play. And so it was a total disaster. And luckily, Brittany, it was so great. We were able to kind of, what did you say earlier? Your creativity.
It's just another creative opportunity to mm-hmm. just kind of put together this new puzzle. Yes. Of how do we take pieces from each person and kind of reformat it into just like another creative project. I feel like this is a theme in the maybe what we could call the era of telehealth, this idea of having to use technology to our advantage when it's not going our way. And when it makes a decision, whatever logic or lack of thinking goes into these kind of technological opportunities, I would say.
I love that.
Just another opportunity. So we got to go back through and kind of edit and really listen to each person's mm-hmm. unique story and their unique answers on their own as part of this editing. Yes. And even just that editing process was so much fun to hear one person and their mm-hmm. trajectory through this panel discussion. Mm-hmm. And it almost creates a new perspective on some of those insights and also helps with bringing out themes.
Yes.
So you could hear where people are bringing up similar ideas. The next thing we're diving into is advocacy and identity. And I think that was so much easier to hear when you're listening to each person's story and pulling out what are they really talking about at the root of their response and their engagement. And I don't know if I would have changed any of that, even though you know, we didn't choose for Zoom to to have a mind of its own.
Zoom-like.
it created the space where we did it in a panel format. So there's still that energy of people feeding off of each other's ideas and expanding on ideas. And that wouldn't happen if you just interviewed each person by themselves. Yeah. And now we can also take that individual and highlight some of their specific opinions and thoughts around these themes. So allowing it to be just another creative opportunity in its own little project that just turns on that adaptable piece in our brains.
Oh, your cognitive
continually training.
Right? Oh my gosh, yes. That's a goal I need to write for my own self of like more cognitive flexibility, thinking outside the box. And I think you're so right. I'm so thankful that it rolled out this way. And because, you know, it is like those things that get thrown in your way, but then it was like, okay, all of this information is still here. And it was really interesting because I think like you said, with themes, we came into this really leaning hard with like identity is definitely going to come up of like, what is your clinical identity and how has that shifted or how do you see it shifting? But something I was almost blindsided by, but it makes so much sense, is advocacy and how important this theme was as it came up throughout all of these discussions. And it is so cool to hear everybody specifically talk about those different, their unique identities and their unique experiences with advocacy. I'm curious, Brittany, with your, and actually we were talking a little bit off air about this, of how even now where you're at, you know, we recorded this, I think maybe 3 or 4 months ago, but your identity has changed. Your clinical identity feels like it's changed a little bit even from then. So can you share a little bit with us about your, you know, the shift in your clinical identity throughout your cross-training journey?
Yes, it started with a lot of defensiveness when I was taking a course on professional identity in counseling with a marriage and family focus, and being the person in the class that was like, well, I'm not changing professional identities. I'm still a music therapist. Mm-hmm. And not that anyone was saying that I should be changing identities. The professor teaching that would never have said that. And it was just this kind of internal process of kind of understanding how tightly I was holding on to this music therapy identity and how much of that came from external and some of that was really held internally. And through the classes and coursework, I found that some professors I could really just open up to, and I actually got to educate on music therapy. There was one instance where it was a child and adolescent course, and they were showing videos of a play therapist who really on accident used the term music therapy incorrectly. They had opened the video with, I am not an art therapist, not a music therapist. I'm using these modalities. And there are additional trainings for those. And then accidentally said music therapy later in reference to what they were doing, just completely on accident. But this was a video that was required for all the students to watch. And I felt like, okay, I need to correct this. I need to step in. And I had a professor who was willing to have me share and talk about the difference and talk about scope of practice and introduce some of those or reinforce some of those concepts in class. And then there were other times when I felt like I wanted to pull away from that music therapy identity, again, more personally than external in my journey of feeling like I was with certain professors or with certain topics, I wanted to dig into something else. And of course, in the back of my mind, I'm still relating it to how this would work with this population. What's coming to mind is I wrote a paper on in psychopharmacology around different alternative options to psychopharmacology for dementia. And of course, music therapy should be one of those. Oh yes, of course, use music therapy in this and this and this. But I kept it broader to sensory. I kept it broader to what kind of sensory experiences and non-farm approaches would be helpful. And so in some ways I was just trying to broaden myself, and it looked like I was kind of pulling away from those advocacy opportunities. And some of it was also just so I was learning this depth of new information and exploring this other area of scope. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm in practicum, it has switched to, okay, I plan on integrating these. I want to tell you up front, every supervisor I have, every place where people ask me, what is your goal for the next year? And they're expecting the learn how to be a counselor goal. And I say, I want to learn how to integrate two different professional identities into one. Mm-hmm. And finding that I'm very supported, and I still have to do a little bit of education depending on the person. I also feel really expected or respected in my scope of practice, where one supervisor I had was saying, you know, I can't supervise you on your music therapy pieces of your practice, and you can integrate them. I'm not trained as a music therapist, so I can help train and supervise you in marriage, family, child counseling and that kind of focus. I cannot supervise the music therapy piece, and I want you to integrate it, and I want you to feel like you're allowed to do that. So having people who are walking alongside me, and also introducing the concept of music therapy to, and music therapists, this idea of it being a person, to clinicians who have never heard of it.
Yes.
And now they know.
Yes.
And now we can start a discussion. And now I can find little ways to integrate it while still trying to respect, just like any music therapy advocacy, right? Mm-hmm. You want to respect where the person is. And you want to see where there's openings to expand their understanding of it.
Yes.
And I found that that's starting to come a little bit more naturally. And I'm starting to find more of this embrace of where they overlap. So if we think of it like a Venn diagram, and there's this place in the middle where kind of these music-based principles may be used by other kinds of clinicians anyway.
Yes.
And the example I was talking about earlier was this confidentiality chant that I had learned as an intern for a children's grief and loss camp. And any clinician could do that chant. You don't necessarily need to be a music therapist to chant confidentiality. Mm-hmm. So it's already in the middle of the Venn diagram. And then where can I, because of my expertise in both areas, expand that middle of the Venn diagram? And
yes.
Feeling like that is a lot more possible. It feels a little bit more concrete now than when we recorded before.
Yeah, and that Venn diagram, actually, side note, I have a, I'm going to put this in the show notes because I just released this a couple weeks ago. A download that is the Venn diagram kind of thing, but it's a little bit bigger. It has really your modality in the middle. If you imagine one big circle, and that's your modality or your grounding or your initial profession and scope of practice. And then along the outside are different creative arts or, you know, counseling or all these different other adjacent fields that we work with and that you work with depending on your situation. And each of them has that overlapping piece of like that overlapping section and that exactly that space that you're talking about, that space between. And for me, I'm a really visual person. So I was like, I need to make this into a picture because I keep thinking it and I can't like word it the right way and can't really get it, but having that visual has helped me so much in the same kind of a process too. So I'll make sure to put that in the show notes because that might be helpful.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, advocacy and identity, I think, you know, I know I felt with I felt really strongly, I think identity was something that I really struggled with a lot throughout the whole process, really, of cross-training, of deciding to cross-train. Similarly, like you, I think I felt there was some defensiveness at the beginning and some vulnerability, I think maybe is really what I felt and what I was a little bit scared of, is the idea of I've built such a strong identity with music therapy and being a music therapist. What does that mean if I'm cross-training in something else? And am I leaving it? Am I a traitor? You know, like I feel so deeply about music therapy and about its power, and I don't want to abandon that. And I do feel now that I've come, you know, years past that space of, I think that is because of the lack of discussion about cross-training, is I just didn't know. But I was really lucky to have a supervisor who was also cross-trained as a music therapist. And she had her doctorate in and did mostly mental health counseling. And so she was really able to help me feel all of those things wherever I was at that particular sometimes it was like the particular day. I remember times being like hearing about, you know, Jungian dream analysis and being like, oh my gosh, I want to look more into that. Maybe I don't want to do music therapy. And then the next day I'd be like, no, music therapy and play blend together so well. And it, my identity was like, oh man, maybe like a ping pong game.
I was thinking some kind of imagery, like a swing or a ping pong or something where you kind of just go back and forth and you hope that eventually you're like, you're coming towards the center. And I think that's so relatable.
Yes.
And some of that comes from an external too. But there's just, I think, a lack of discussion and understanding around how do you integrate identities, and what does that mean for you as a clinician? And so it's almost not surprising that you're just going to kind of go from wall to wall. Which one makes more sense today?
Yes. And I honestly think that I've really tried to, and this was more of an internal thing that I had a hard time with. I really wanted to, like, I wanted one and I just wanted to pick it and like, okay, I'm just, but then I really had to sit with it and be like, you know, I think this process in itself is the beauty of cross training, is that I can go into a session and ping pong to where I need to be. And find that sweet spot along that kind of, you know, that ping pong table of like, ooh, okay, I need to be a little bit over here today. This is what this client needs. And then the next hour, I might be a little bit more over on the other side. And sitting with that uncertainty, but knowing that the power of cross-training is within that uncertainty. That was hard for me. I'm not a very good person with a lot of uncertainty. So I really had to sit with that. But I do feel like that actually has come to, I've come to realize that that is the beauty of it, is that I don't have to pick. And it can be both, and it can be one, and it can be the other. And it's really depending on what the client needs that day.
Yeah. And being able to really take this idea of meeting the client where they are to another level.
Yes. Yeah. That, like we said earlier, like wanting to keep going and now being able to.
Right.
Awesome. Well, what we're going to hear next, we're going to hear our panel guests talk a little bit about their shift in clinical identity, sometimes their lack of shift or their process around processing their clinical identity and what that looks like when you are cross-training. And as well, just like Brittany and I really kind of touched on too, advocacy does come up because it is really an important thing as we're cross-training. I think we said a couple times in here, it's like we're the fringe of the fringe because we're putting our foot in a different discipline. Our advocacy hats are going to come on a little bit more. So you're going to hear our guests talk a little bit more about advocacy and identity.
together with that, isn't it, you know, I feel sad. Yes, we have so many unique blends, and we bring so much of our unique blends into our profession. And when I started my second master's, you know, Kate, when we were talking in the fall, last fall, when you were interviewing me, I was telling you, I was like, which hat do I wear? Who am I? And I had this identity issue. But then I, by the end of my education, you know, when I spent 8 months in the internship, and when I could bring music therapy into my psychotherapy sessions, I realized, oh my gosh, I enriched my own work, and I enriched clients' experiences so much. But then when we talk about accessibility, affordability, and, you know, the insurance coverage, isn't it so sad that we still have to prove ourselves everywhere in the world, literally everywhere? I think only in UK and Australia, those are only two countries in the world that are, you know, more or less comfortable. You know, music therapists are providing free services for clients, so they are paid by the government, or I don't know by who, but it's just bothering.
I was gonna share, I've had similar experience. I haven't had that, you know, experience of someone saying like, why are you doing this or anything. It's more like them saying, wow, like you're gonna be a great social worker because the music therapy degree is already giving you so much. So I've had the an opposite experience almost. I don't know that they, you know, and the people that surround me, the coworkers, they are very supportive of music therapy. But the social workers that I've talked to and other helping professionals, they have been impressed with the degree and in music therapy and what we can do and how we can support people. And and so they just think that the social work, you know, it just an addition, but that the degree already, I mean, the social work is, it's adding, I guess, but you're not taking anything away, or I don't know, a little different perspective, which kind of surprised me, because I thought that I was going to have the alternative that we were talking about before.
I don't know. I feel like you're always going to run into people who are going to judge you for what, you know. Like, I remember I was talking, I spoke with working with a Jungian psychologist. And he had a very different career path to becoming a PhD in Jungian psychology. And he said that there was actually judgment on him from certain professors because of his career, his path was not conventional at all. And so there was judgment upon him from professors that he had because of his life choices as they looked at it. And he said, you know, I found it. It doesn't really matter. You know, like, in some sense, does it really matter how I found it? You know, I found it and I figured it out. And I'm personally fascinated by the work of Carl Jung and how it if it can be translated into creative arts therapy and music therapy. You know, working with the subconscious, that's fascinating to me. But yeah, again, it's like we're multi-dimensional, multifaceted individuals, all of us, with different life experiences. You know, are other things like social work, like clinical mental health counseling, like going for a PsyD, like music psychology, which is a slightly different thing, music education. You know, each one is its own thing that needs to be respected, as well as music therapy. And it's just kind of like, well, what is your role going to be in this whole thing?
I really identify, Corey, with your emotional turmoil in sort of figuring all of this out. You spoke beautifully, Cherub, about integrating all of it. And that's the goal, right? Like, I But in figuring that out, and I will say I'm still figuring it out, it was a huge, and I joke that it was an identity crisis. It wasn't really a crisis, but it was really trying personally because I really aligned myself as a music therapist. And going through my program and having just like completed it now, I feel like I was able to kind of figure out how to integrate some things together. Obviously, I'm still figuring it out. But it was really tough. I mean, and then two, I think, you know, not having, I think not really having like support or someone to look to that has gone through it and has been able to integrate it. I actually looked kind of online to see if there were more cross-trained music therapists, but specifically an OT. And I found that I'm even kind of more, like kind of like I said before, a little bit more even of like a niche sort of perspective because I want to work in mental health. And actually music therapy and OT, like the NMT music therapy, I think would really align with what a lot of OTs are actually doing in the field, the area and the population they're working with. But I'm like not interested in that at all. So I think like what I found is a lot of OT music therapy cross-trained individuals like are more on sort of that end and working in more physical rehab and neurological rehab side. And I really love mental health. So it was definitely difficult to kind of figure out, and me trying to hold on to that identity that was such a huge part of me. I even had a situation where we would do practice questions, like exam questions in some of our courses. And there was one question, one of the answers was music therapy. And it was not an appropriate use of music therapy as an answer compared to the other answers that were provided. And I like couldn't help but like raise my hand and say something about it. And the professor essentially told me, you're here to learn about occupational therapy. You're not here to learn about music therapy. And so that's not the focus. Not all of my experiences were like that, but I think I was really mad initially. but in another sense, like she was right. You know, I was in this program to learn about OT, and you know, that like triggered my like identity, you know, like my advocacy and everything that I had like, you know, built up until that point. And but I do appreciate that. I think now I'm able to sort of look back and appreciate that situation, even though it was really upsetting in the moment, because it did sort of make me look like, okay, yeah, I'm here. I can bring all my experiences with me, but I'm also here, like, just like my other classmates, like we're all coming from different places and none of us are experts in this area. And that's what we're here to learn. So, yeah. I did not talk to her immediately after class because I was too mad and I knew that it would not be a good idea. I did talk a little bit with her later, but I think at that point I had sort of like come to terms with the fact that, yeah, okay, I'm here to learn OT. And I did sort of explain why it was triggering for me, but it sort of became a conversation more about like me trying to integrate the two and all of that. It wasn't really an effective conversation for like addressing the problem with the question that was presented. I was gonna say, I found it so interesting. My like first week in OT school, I've chosen another fringe therapy as my cross-trained other profession, I guess. So I like that you said like on the fringe of the fringe. I feel like I'm on the fringe of two fringes. but the first thing that they talked to us about, like our first week, we had this somebody from the National Association come and talk to us about like their, you know, 10-year like plan for the profession and goals and all of that. And it was advocacy. And they were talking about advocacy and how OT is misunderstood and people don't know about it and they have to really advocate for the profession, you know, on and on and on. And I'm sitting there like, you guys have no idea. Like, what? Like, I mean, part of why I looked into OT was because I felt like it was more well known. And I could use it to advocate for music therapy, like whatever position I get into, hopefully eventually, as an OT, I'm going to advocate for the profession. But I will say, like, my entire cohort knows about music therapy because I talked about it nonstop. And I also had some of those awkward situations with the professors where I was sort of, you know, educating them about what it was. And some of them were really open and really interested and loved the idea. Some of them knew about it. But there were some that really didn't and were very close-minded. And so it was very interesting to be told day one, you need to advocate for yourself for this profession, when I feel like even personal experience, I also had to advocate day one for music therapy. I think I mentioned earlier, I went to Chapman University for my bachelor's. They no longer have a program. I was actually the last class that graduated from the music therapy program. They phased it out as I was there. So we were already advocating for ourselves, even though we didn't know what music therapy really was yet, you know, like year one or year two, you've gone to maybe some observations. So I don't know. I think advocacy is just going to be part of our profession, and it's, you know, it can be a little daunting, but I think it's also really exciting. I always joke with my friends that I have like the best icebreaker with new people, because I just tell them what I do and they have a million questions usually. And I can talk about it forever, so. Yeah.
All right, so I had an experience similar to Allie's where I had a professor say, your specialty is not music therapy anymore, it's clinical mental health. And I said, how dare you tell me who I am? Like, yes, I'm here to learn this from you, and I want to, you know, add to my practice. But like, you don't get to tell me who I am as a clinician when I'm already, you know, I had to kind of decide. Well, not decide, but I had to remind myself that I knew more about music therapy than my professors did. And as hard as that was for me, because I'm like the kind of person that respects authority, you know. I kind of have to remind myself that they are the experts in what I'm learning from them, but I have something to offer as well. And that really helped me integrate. But yeah, I definitely had that kind of figuring out, you said kind of the black and white thinking. I had to figure out how to make it gray, to say I am this and that at the same time. And I can, you know, navigate that. It's not going to be easy. It's definitely going to be a lot more complicated. And in the work that I'm doing now, I think I'm still kind of experiencing it, because I am hired by a hospital as a music therapist. And so I have been told, you are here to use the modality of music as therapy. And, you know, that's challenging when I have other skills in my tool belt to use, that I kind of have to, you know, figure out, all right, how do I, you know, how do I use everything that I have to offer? And
I like that you brought that up, that your professors were thinking that you were dropping music therapy and you were going to go into counseling. I like wholeheartedly know what you're talking about. And it wasn't just my professors, it was also my classmates, that I don't know, I would get these questions like, well, what are you planning on doing? Are you going to like work part-time as an OT and part-time as a music therapist? And I'm like, no, no. I mean, I think ultimately I probably will look for OT positions, but going into it and applying for those positions, I'm going to say, here, this is me. I'm also a music therapist. So if you're hiring me, you're also going to get this. And if you don't want that, like, this isn't going to be a good fit, you know? Yeah, but I totally understand. I experienced that as well. Like, they couldn't put them together, and that's like what the plan was for me. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I feel, I definitely, like, through all my training and practice, I've definitely, you know, heard people talking about, okay, like, why I am a therapist now, I graduated and I'm working, for example, in assisted living, why I'm doing everything, why I'm doing like recreational therapy, why I'm using, I have to use like visual arts and poetry or lead other activities. And I just remember a big takeaway from one of my supervisor is that I love his perspective is that, you know, as a new therapist, even though you're doing, for example, even though you're doing recreational therapy or like as an activity therapist, the title, but because you have that training, your view, like compared to who doesn't have that therapeutic training of how to use music, this art form to support and help people, but you have that view that's where's those theory, this clinical evidence. So you actually have the ability to support people on a deeper level than someone doesn't have that training. And also the other view is that, like, yes, now I'm specifically trained, like in my music therapy program, I specifically trained how to use music, but there are a lot of transferable principle or theory or philosophy that I can use, that I can apply to arts, to poetry, to spoken words, to movement, to drama. There are specific things that I need to learn in these particular fields, but there are lots of those components that's transferable and related. That's kind of become my foundation. Like also like I feel my identity is broader, you know. Maybe it can also be related to because I had psychology training and my first exposure was in psychodrama, but my teacher, she's also using somatic therapy, ghost art, and music, like movement. So I feel like I was exposed in that environment at the beginning of my career. And I feel like there's no separation. There's all things I did, it's just different ways to, because every client may have different channel, like their best, the best way to connect with them. Some people may be a bit more visual. Some people may be more like connect with emotion. When I'm trying to explore again where I'm standing, I find myself, like my approach now is more like, okay, I'm gonna use all these assessment, evaluation, those tools I've learned through music therapy. And then I can also offer, like if someone is more want to verbal process, I can like connect with them more on that level or on like drama level or like visual arts or music, or someone's like, I'm gonna use all of it to help them. That's kind of like, oh, like, I don't feel like, oh, separate, I have to choose one and give up to other ones. And with that kind of separated mindset, I know like it's in a society, like in a lot of people. I think that's kind of where the root is. And it's also contributed to a lot of the larger political. Like, I feel like we all connected in the deeper level. But when we're clinging to like the, for the people to put people in the box, I think that's where the problem of a lot of the challenges we're facing.
Yeah, so I I was lucky. My second master's was at Yorkville University's biopsychosocial approach. And people, most of us, we were already coming with our first master's, you know, bunch of additional education, you know, from all walks of life. There was only one music therapist from Vancouver. And we were so like, so happy because it's purely online program, everything online except your 8 months internship. And when we, you don't meet the same, sometimes you get with the same people, like a couple of, you know, known faces or names. But when we bumped into each other and, you know, the first introduction part of every class, and when I read it, like, oh my gosh, another music therapist. I was so happy. So we had this conversation among us. But I was very lucky with all of my professors. Nobody ever told me these kind of things. And to the contrary, they embraced our differences and our experiences. And they always told us to build on it. It makes me thinking a little bit of when I was in my first master's and when I had classes, live classes at Colorado State with Dr. Michael Thout. He was telling us, and Blythe Legasse also, they were telling us, okay, just because it is a hub for neurologic music therapy, we don't ask you to just cut off whatever you knew before that. No, to the contrary, you bring it in and you just make it, you know, build it from there. And I think that's any good professor, good person would do, but apparently, yeah, not all of them are like this.
I will say I probably described more of my negative experiences, I think mostly because those were the tougher ones, right? I did have some positive experiences too. I had some professors that were very open, and I even had, we had like this one assignment where we had to pull from other disciplines research and present like an intervention based on that. And there were some groups that looked at music therapy, which I was really excited about, but also at the time, this was like earlier on in my program, and also a little upset that they didn't come and talk to me, because I'm like, I had already made it known that I was the music therapist in the room. but what was really cool was that the professor in that course really made, actually created like a class discussion on the topic of using, because OT draws from everything else, right? Like they're drawing from psychology, they're drawing from PT, they're drawing from, you know, everything. And yoga, but that was one situation that I really felt respected and acknowledged. And not just me, but the professor also brought up like looking at all the other professions. Like if you're bringing in this yoga intervention, can you say that you are doing yoga if you're not, you know, a certified yoga instructor? You know, if you're bringing in art, can you say that it's art therapy? Like, so looking at the language and then really recognizing like where you pulled from and talking about it. And I was able to kind of like put in my input about music therapy in that space, which was really nice. So there were some professors that were really supportive throughout my education during this master's program, but yeah, so like me both.
All right. So we've heard a lot of different, so much growth and so many different experiences about cross training, the ups and the downs, because there are definitely both the ping pong, the back and forth, all of the stuff. But as we come to some closing thoughts, I would love to hear a little bit about, especially with where you are, Brittany, in your journey, and we'll hear a little bit about from our other panel guests as well, but the benefits of cross-training. What have you found throughout this process that are the unique, the special, the really wonderful things that have come to you since deciding to become a cross-trained music therapist?
One of the first benefits that comes to my mind is this depth of understanding. And it's interesting to look at it because in some ways it's not always changing exactly what I'm doing in sessions. So for example, having all of these master's level courses and being able to bring some of that information into the work that I continue to do as a hospice music therapist, now I can see certain levels of mental health that I wasn't able to see before. Being able to better understand what might go into a diagnosis or go into looking at just the family structure and how that influences the patient's experience. And so with that depth of understanding, while I don't see myself doing anything too drastically different, I do see how my understanding can match those other clinicians at a higher level now. Now I can speak with the interdisciplinary team with more clarity and with more understanding of the exact impact of music therapy. And I think that goes both ways, being able to explain more of that music therapy impact, but then also be able to get that sense of when and where the social worker might want to dig deeper into a case or a flag that came up. Now I'm seeing more of those different flags. They're not always red flags, but different flags of family dynamics or interactions, and being able to parse some of that depth. I can also feel more comfortable in holding a deeper depth. I can't always go there yet, right? I'm not licensed yet. Mm-hmm. I can't necessarily dig all the way into that in my hospice music therapy work as much as I'll be able to do that in practicum, because with counseling and therapy being the focus and being the focus of the sign-on and the consent, I'm looking forward to starting at that depth and then seeing where creativity can pull it deeper or can affirm that depth. And I am seeing that in my hospice music therapy practice, where this broader idea of meaning-based song selection or introduction, now I know exactly where to tune into that, what piece of what someone's saying is really the key deeper piece, or knowing when that therapeutic window is. So maybe they do bring up an emotion and they're not quite there in holding that space. They don't necessarily want to go that deep yet. But I can see it. I can see where there are these edges in patients and families where I wasn't seeing that edge before. And I really appreciate having that deeper understanding, as well as having a comfort level for holding that space with not just more confidence, but with more informed. Mm-hmm. It's not just confidence that would make the difference in holding that space for a family. I think a level of understanding and knowing why I'm asking a question, or why I'm introducing maybe something verbal before musical, makes sense. And in the middle of the pandemic, having some of the verbal before musical has been very helpful.
Yes. I've definitely found the same. I love your that depth of knowledge piece, is that really is so so important, I think. And especially too, even within music therapy, everybody's training is even so different depending on the school that they went to. Right. Of, you know, the emphasis, and to try to hold space that you don't have the depth of knowledge for, or, you know, that is out of your scope, can be so dangerous. And we also know that with music. We know music, if it's not done right, can be so dangerous. And having that depth of knowledge and pairing it with music is just incredibly powerful. It's knowing more of those intricacies, that vertical depth of knowledge more than horizontal depth of knowledge, right. I guess. I feel similarly too, in that knowledge and confidence too, so much. And that's taken a long time, I think, because it's It feels like, I mean, it almost feels like you're a total newbie again when you're like jumping into like, how do I talk with the verbal skill? You know, like doing all of that takes a while. It takes practice and it is like learning your repertoire, you know, and but that confidence definitely comes. And when you pair it with that depth of knowledge, it's so phenomenal. And I think the one of the benefits that I found is the most simple, but just the benefit to the client, the benefit that you can come in with depth of knowledge in these two different areas and weave them together in a way that supports the client in the best way that they need to be supportive, and not having to stop when, like when we said before, when you reach that edge, now there that edge is farther out with that, and we can continue to move, and how much that can just literally progress therapy when you keep moving like that.
I also think about like therapeutic adaptability. To be able to go in another direction, kind of like what we were talking about, this idea of meeting the client where they are now in another level. So when they're moving away from music for whatever reason, and some of that might be healthy, maybe music was triggering something and they don't quite want to touch that, but they do want to keep talking to you. I actually had a patient like that fairly recently where I could tell that music was really this emotional piece, and we could touch on it for some of the session, but to do that for the whole 50 minutes that I ended up being in the room would have been way too much. And it was every song, even though it didn't seem like from the outside that every song necessarily had that depth of meaning. Music was just an emotional space. And so being able to hold the verbal space was what that patient needed to come back to neutral. Music wasn't going to do that. So being able to have the therapeutic flexibility and adaptability, I think that's one really key benefit of any cross training.
Yes, so much. That blending and that ping pong, that back and forth of whatever it is, wherever you need to be for that client. Yes. One of the things that I think, and I hope that this gets more traction, maybe that's the word, if this can be talked about more, is the benefit of cross-trained therapists to their communities. As music therapists, you know, I feel like, you know, there are so many music therapists out there who may want to learn more about child mental health. And, you know, learning that from a music therapist, but who also has secondary, is cross-trained in something, is a special place, you know, that music therapist, that, you know, those music therapists may not want to cross-train, but they need to know more of that for their practice. And it feels like cross-trained music therapists are in a really wonderful place to serve other therapists. And on the flip side of the coin, when we look at our other foot that's in, you know, mine's in counseling, for counselors who are looking for ways to incorporate music within their scope of practice, you know, then I can turn around and help. And in doing this, we're building such a more a deeper network and connection between those two disciplines, which is so, that's advocacy, it's building awareness of music therapy. And that feels like this really amazing place where cross-trained music therapists can be like these connectors between two worlds. You know, we're holding hands in both of those domains and really like serving, you know, we can serve so many people in that way in a unique capacity.
Yes. And I've already been seeing that begin. I think it's hard not to naturally fall into that when you're cross-trained, because now you're seeing two sides of what is going on. Maybe more, but just simply putting it, whatever you are trained in, now you get that lens. And you can bring that lens to the other side. And I also consider how that can help deepen the advocacy from a place of understanding when we're getting taught by a music therapist about child mental health, as your example, then we can have it translated into our language, into our area of understanding. We know what's already known, so we don't teach it in a way that feels a little bit like we aren't being understood, right? Mm-hmm. And so the same can go when we're going into other disciplines, is now we are learning their language and we can see where it's maybe similar, maybe it's just different dialects versus languages. Yes. And we can pull from either side to help with kind of this mutual understanding that I think will help all professions grow in a way that maybe in my mind even feels interdisciplinary, even if they're not in a setting where it's already interdisciplinary. If we can even consider private practice or community mental health agencies or areas where there might be one music therapist more siloed, if we can start thinking in this interdisciplinary model by either learning from those who are cross-trained or having those who are just help with that bridge, I think it can really benefit our disciplines as well as our clients when we can speak to each other in that way.
I love that, the interdisciplinary. That's such a good way to put it. And you said it so beautifully, how it really can impact, it's systemic. It's, you know, we're going to mm-hmm. impact our relationships with our clients, but then that's going to grow into a ripple effect into the larger community, and it just keeps going. And yes, so well said. Yes. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to wrap up with some closing thoughts from our panel guests. And they're going to talk a little bit about some of those benefits as well, and hear a little bit about even their experience being on the panel and talking with each other and kind of having this conversation that doesn't get to be had quite often. So we're going to wrap up with those closing thoughts.
I wanted to kind of continue with what Oksana was saying. Well, the first thing, this is something that I would say to myself then, it's that pursuing a different degree, if I would say that, that doesn't take away from who you are as a music therapist. Perhaps it adds more to it. And just like Oksana was saying, research and make decisions that make sense in a practical sense, but also think about what is it that you want to pursue that will help you with your purpose and fulfill your mission.
And I was just gonna say, celebrate how unique you are, because, you know, we've been talking about how we're the fringe of a fringe. The uniqueness that you have to offer is so special and can be so beautiful when you have, you know, a variety of patients or clients that you're working with. So celebrate that. Don't be afraid of it. Celebrate it. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes. From what Amelia was saying, I just remember, so we're talking about fringe and fringe, but also, you know, when I heard a lot of like when people talk about how to start a business or a brand, it's also like when we try to find the niche is what we want to look for. So fringe, it's also the niche where you have the uniqueness, it's also your niche. And the other thing I want to add is we were talking about all the chaos that's happening now. I feel like a lot of time I hear people like feel like afraid of chaos and feel like, oh, this is so stressful. And I find when thinking of it a way is, you know, when everything's ordered, there's no creativity. But it's only in chaos there's creativity.
And so my advice, again, like Brittany, like you said, listen to yourself, listen to your intuition. Yes, make your research, look at what is more important for you. Maybe for some it will be important just to get into the field that will get you straight into the big box. Okay, I don't know what field is that right now, but maybe. But if you want to search, and if you want, or if you already search and you know exactly what you are going to do, even though it doesn't make any much difference in a paycheck at the end of the month, do it.
I was saying, you go ahead. I think too, like, finding other people that are going through what you're going through, and connecting with them. I don't know, that was really helpful for me. I actually also have a very dear friend who has been a colleague as a music therapist for quite a number of years now, who is partway through her occupational therapy master's program, and sort of like being there for her has been helpful for me too. So sort of reaching out and finding those people that you can connect with.
So it is about that time where we are going to wrap up this episode, this super special, unique, creative episode that we're finally getting out. I'm so excited. So Brittany, I want to thank you so much again for coming on and co-hosting and coming up with this idea. I'm just really excited to get it out there and hope that anybody who is thinking of cross-training is able to take a listen and feel some of that validation. So thank you.
And I hope that this can reach anyone when and where they need it, so that you can know that there is a sense of community that's starting to build around just being cross-trained and moving through professional identity.
Yes, I love it. Well, where can our listeners, where can they find you, Brittany, if they want to reach out to you and are more curious about some of the stuff that you're doing?
So you can find me on Instagram at brittany.mtbc. You can find me on Facebook and shoot me a message. I'm also in the Cross-Trained Music Therapist Facebook group, which I'm sure will be in the show notes.
Yes.
And I also have my email that can be in the show notes. I'm more than happy to answer questions, especially for those who might be interested in that marriage, family, child focus as part of a cross-trained degree. Mm-hmm. And those are the main places you can find me. And then, of course, AMTA Music Therapy YouTube, if you haven't seen that. Yay. I highly recommend you start checking that out. I know I didn't know it existed until I was on it.
I didn't either until you told me today. That will definitely be linked in our show notes for sure, as well as that cross-trained music therapist group is a phenomenal space to learn from others. And so that will be linked, and I will put links to all of the Creative Therapy Umbrella stuff as well. And I am, of course, available for anyone who is interested in learning more about child mental health and creativity and music therapy, play therapy and music therapy. And I have a couple things. I just started a community for that. So lots of different spaces to learn, which is really, really exciting. So, well, Brittany, thank you again for coming on and being a co-host. This was awesome.
Thank you so much for collaborating with me, and I have a feeling this won't be the last time.
Oh, I like that. Yes. Stay tuned for the next one. All right. That concludes the panel episode with cross-trained music therapists. I hope that you guys enjoyed these two episodes, and feel free to reach out to any of our panelists. They've all been so amazing during this time and offering their time to chat with us, and it was just such a great time. If you have an idea of a panel episode that you would like to see on the podcast, please feel free and reach out. Let me know. I love hearing about these ideas and, getting behind the scenes and making them come to fruition. So thank you guys so much for listening. Send me lots of luck this week as we're moving across the country. Probably when you're listening to this, we will be driving. Any good vibes appreciated. Also, always feel free to reach out. Thank you guys so much, and be creative.